Rich Kimball here with you on The Pulse, WZON. Our next guest on the program has appeared in a number of movies like Cape Fear, Goodfellas, Grace of My Heart, countless TV shows, including her own branded TV show, Easy to Assemble. She's a host that you see quite frequently on Turner Classic Movies and the author of a wonderful book, I Blame Dennis Hopper. Ileana Douglas joins us on Downtown. Ileana, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
I absolutely love the book, and of course, I was hooked right along from the title of the book, and that's a pretty interesting story in and of itself. What Dennis Hopper did indirectly to your family, but maybe also turned out to be a good thing. Can you explain that?
Yes, my parents were big, you know, movie fans anyway. They kind of dated through going to the movies, living in New York City, and, you know, going to all the different revival houses. And then they, you know, they'd moved to Connecticut, essentially what I always think of is sort of living the American dream, you know, to live in a suburb, wealthy suburb in Connecticut. And then they saw that darn movie, Easy Rider, and like many other people of their generation, you know, the message of the movie, which was sort of anti-establishment, you know, really affected my father. He so identified with the Dennis Hopper character in the movie that he ended up leaving his job, starting a commune, starting a band, and our whole, you know, middle class life that we had known up to then was tossed aside in favor of, you know, growing up like as I say in the book, you know, dirty hippies. And so I spent my whole childhood and teenage years, you know, my destiny was set because my parents saw that movie. So it's about the power of film. Now, of course, it wouldn't be a great story unless I grew up, became an actress, of course, got cast opposite Dennis Hopper in a film, and had my own kind of epiphany with Dennis Hopper. So it's, some of it is just the crazy circumstances of how one movie can really change your destiny, and the for me overall, the importance of film and how it's played such a part in my life. So each story in the book is dedicated to a larger-than-life character, Dennis Hopper, Marlon Brando, Peter Sellers, people that I was lucky enough to work with, Robert De Niro, of course, that changed my life. So it's not a career book. It's really about the power of film and the love of film that we all have.
And you mentioned some of the people that you've come into contact with, and it's a remarkable ride through some of the most legendary people in Hollywood. I love the story about the advice that you got from Peter Sellers. You'd gone to watch your grandfather, the legendary Melvin Douglas, making the movie Being There. You met Peter Sellers, and you got some advice that you would end up following in a strange way many years later.
Yes, and I should explain that part of the reason I always sort of thought of my life as a movie is that, you know, my parents were in their kind of 1970s psychedelic film, you know, and then I kind of made this discovery when I was about five or six that my grandfather was a famous movie star from the golden era, which I kind of explain in the book. And in my life, I was like, oh, I want to be in his movie. I want to be in the black and white movie where, you know, there are servants and a doorman building and we get to ride to a movie set in a limousine. Like, that seemed like a pretty good life to want to be in. So when I was about 13, he invited me to visit him on the set of Being There. And this, for me, was such an eye-opening experience because it was like I had posters of Peter Sellers on my wall, and then now I was meeting the real-life Peter Sellers. So it was this concept that I couldn't believe, the amount of people that really go behind making a movie. And I was just excited about meeting, you know, Inspector Clouseau. And so after they had finished shooting, my grandfather said, oh, Peter, I think you have a Clouseau fan here. And he went into this incredible comic routine about, you know, was I part of a French baguette stealing ring? And everybody was kind of laughing. And then he got sort of serious. And then he said, do you know how to ride a unicycle? And I said, no, you know, little kid, no. And he said, and he got sort of serious and said, oh, but you must learn to ride a unicycle because it's hard and not everyone can do it. And it was a kind of, you know, quirky, funny thing for him to say, and I completely had forgotten about it. And then many years later, I had moved back to New York. This was like around 2001. And I went to see, you know, a psychic just to kind of get a fine tuning of like, where's my life going? And it turned out she wasn't a psychic. She was a medium. I said, okay, a medium. All right. She said, who do you want me to contact? I said, well, let's contact my grandfather. I was very close with him. And through the process of contacting my grandfather, she started to describe someone, and she said he's surrounded by pink and he has a tic-tac-toe on his forehead. Does that mean anything for you? And I immediately was struck with this People magazine cover that I had of Peter Sellers that was in my bedroom, and I just thought, well, this is really weird. I said, is it Peter Sellers? You know? And she said, he's on a unicycle. Does that mean anything for you? And I just nearly fell out of my chair. It was this crazy childhood remembrance that took me all the way back to that. And we spent the rest of the time communing, if you believe in that kind of thing, with Peter Sellers and the grandfather, who, and I wrote about this in my book, who then asked me to come back and watch the movie Being There, with Peter Sellers doing commentary from the other side, which I did.
I love it. Now, we're talking with Ileana Douglas here on Downtown. You not only know your movie history, but you've celebrated your work on TCM, exposes history to people who may not be aware of it, with the Second Look series and with Trailblazing Women. And you were surprised in the book, and I was surprised at this too, at how few young actors know their history. And if they did, they would know that there's sort of an unbroken line from the great Spencer Tracy through Richard Dreyfuss and then to you.
Absolutely. That's something I love film history because, you know, when I met Richard Dreyfuss, I said, I have a confession to make, because I was working with him. I said, I have a confession to make. You know, my whole childhood, I used to watch you in movies, and when I got to acting school, whenever I got in trouble, I would just say, I'm going to do Richard Dreyfuss and Jaws. Like, I just love that. I'm like, when in doubt, you know, because I said he's so cocky, so full of himself, you know, I'm going to... And then he looked at me and he said, well, it's funny you say that, because my whole career, all I've ever been doing is Spencer Tracy. So I said, so wait a minute. So I'm doing you doing Spencer Tracy. And so the more we started to talk about this, the more we discovered this kind of through line of acting and how acting really hasn't changed much in terms of the great actors, you know, like Spencer Tracy, like Marlon Brando. And so it's so important to go back and see somebody like Spencer Tracy, because you then see, oh, how he affected Richard Dreyfuss, and then how Richard Dreyfuss affected me. And all of those little, you know, things just make you, they complete a nice circle, I think. And I mean, so much of my work with Turner is kind of trying to do an inside-outside approach, which is, you know, I've worked with Richard Dreyfuss, but I've also been a fan of Richard Dreyfuss. And so a lot of these people, you know, I've worked with Jerry Lewis. I've also interviewed Jerry Lewis and studied his films and talked to Martin Scorsese about Jerry. So I try to approach it from a movie fan point of view, because I'm just as much of a fan of the movies as everybody else. But within that, I try to give it some context so that we can really celebrate these movies and maybe celebrate some of their undiscovered, you know, film roles that some of these people have done, and also celebrate some of the people that really don't get talked about as much, too. You know, I've got another book in me, believe me, of all my other people the James Woods is, and the Richard Benjamins, and, you know, there's so many people that I want to continue to be able to talk about.
You had a long personal and professional relationship with Martin Scorsese, and people often talk about how he influenced you, but all that time together, you certainly influenced his work as well. And I understand that one of the ways you did was being a Costas fan like me. You saw the Bob Costas show, spotted Don Rickles on there, and said, you got to put him in a movie.
Yes, I was. I've never met Bob Costas. I am an unabashed fan. That was my, truly was my favorite television show when I was in New York City and wanting to become an actor. And some of the great, great interviews I saw on that show, you know, Paul Mazursky and Paul Simon and Don Rickles. And there was a week where Don Rickles was on. They literally just kept shooting with him. So he was on five nights in a row. I mean, it sounds sort of unheard of. And he just made people so comfortable that they really were these amazing interviews. And after I saw the Don Rickles, you know, interviewing, he was talking about Vegas, and they happened to be casting Casino at the time. And I said, Marty, you've got to take a look. I also made him be on Bob Costas because I was so concerned. I was like, this show is too good. It's going to go off the air. You've got to be on this show. And so you can be part of the catalog, part of the canon. But yeah, so I said, you got to watch these interviews, which I would tape, of course, in the old days with our VCR and our little cheap tapes. But sent them that five-night sequence of Don Rickles, and they ended up, he was cast in the movie, and I thought he was fantastic in the film, you know, sort of counter-casting. So God bless Bob Costas.
One of my favorite movies of yours is Grace of My Heart, a wonderful collaboration with Alison Anders, and it was a true collaboration. Of course, it resonated for you because of the tie-in to the Brill Building where you had worked at. Now, you make the comment in the book about it being a woman's picture. I may have to have my chromosomes tested because I absolutely love the movie, and I thought it spoke to both men and women so very well.
Thank you. Well, that was the intention. I wrote about that because it was kind of in a funny way. I mean, this was 1994. We were making the movie, and at that time, you know, there was a lot of independent films, and women were directing films. I worked with a lot of sort of female directors around this time, and so it was so support. You know, and this was a movie that we considered to be a kind of an ensemble cast about the music industry, and where we were working, we kind of got tagged as, well, it's a sensitive women's picture, and we really, you know, so I wrote about that saying, kind of, well, why? Just because I'm a woman and the director was a woman, and I think to a certain extent that marketing campaign, you know, may have hurt us a little bit because we wanted to be marketed, you know, as they didn't market That Thing You Do as like a guy's picture. They marketed that as a, you know, as just a movie about music. But we got sort of pegged, and which I wrote about in the book. We were penalized in our budget. You know, some of the things that, you know, that occurred because Alison was a female director. We just had to fight a lot more battles. But, you know, luckily, again, the movie is, you know, really held up, and I'm quite proud of it as one of the movies that I helped get off the ground.
Absolutely. I have a little something to play for you, too, that I think you might like.
The best.
Little Mary Hopkin.
I know. She's the best. Me and Alison Anders. And we didn't have, in those days, I only had my 45. I had to wait for the technology so I could, you know, get something that wasn't as scratchy as my old 45s. But Alison and I, you know, in the midst of, which is so funny, we were trying to do a movie about the poet Anne Sexton. And every time we'd get together, we'd bring our 45s and play music and talk about our mixtapes, and because I've just always had an obsession with music. And I think, again, this goes back to why I blame Dennis Hopper, you know, and I'm saying that in a kind of funny way. My introduction to music was from all the hippies at the commune, you know, playing Rolling Stones or playing Joni Mitchell. And, you know, in some cases, some of these hippies came and they had their 45s, I'm not kidding, from the 50s. You know, because in those days you carried around your records with you.
Right. I can still see that Mary Hopkin record with the green Apple label.
Oh, absolutely. And we would, you know, so we would pour over all the hippies' 45s and records, not even, again, really understanding what they were, but it was like, well, this is what the grown-ups do. They listen to records. And so, like, we'd listen to records. And so you'd find even a record, you know, like Splish Splash, Bobby Darin, and not even understanding the significance of it. As a child, you'd go, I dig this. This is fun. You know, we'd like, as little kids, we were like, Build Me Up Buttercup. Yeah, this is a kid's song, right? It's fun. It's poppy, you know? And that's one of my favorite, you know, memories. That's what I talk about in the book. It took me growing up to understand that I turned out that I had the best childhood for me as an artist, you know. And things may have been a little kooky growing up, but in the end, it was like, you know, God bless Dennis Hopper, because I ended up with a better life after all.
So many people, so many wonderful stories in the book, whether it was Roddy McDowell, Uncle Roddy, whether it was Marlon Brando, Joe Mankiewicz, Jerry Lewis, Mike Nichols, so many of them that you have had great stories about and awesome moments with. What led them, I know what led you to them, but what led them to embrace you?
Well, that's the big, that is the deep mystery of my life. I've tried to write about it, you know, even in the introduction. You know, I approached, you know, life, Mike Nichols was going to be showing The Graduate, and my only intention was to come and get him to sign my album, my Nichols and May album. And so I was shocked that he looked up and said, oh, you, I like you, and started giving me a whole dissertation about my film work and what books I should read and, you know, and the mystical thing that they see in me. I think I got to the very end of the book, and I figured with Jerry Lewis that I truly think it is some kind of innocent love of their work. That's all I can think of, is that Marlon Brando, all these people, that there's some kind of a sincerity, some kind of childlike sincerity, and I think it goes all the way back and my father, my grandfather taking me on the set of Being There and being a little kid and just watching, like, is this happening? I'm watching Peter Sellers. Like, when I go back home, he's going to be on a poster on my wall. And so it created a kind of indelible image, I think, of magic that has never become cynical about it. And I think that I can only guess that is what they see in me, is a genuine kind of love and an interest and not an agenda of their work. I celebrate their work. I really do think of them as movie gods, and I try to, you know, when I'm down, I watch a movie. It's like, I still think it's the greatest thing ever, is to watch a movie. You know, 2 hours can really change your life, and it changed my parents' life seeing Easy Rider, and that in turn changed my life.
Well, the book is an absolute delight. I blame Dennis Hopper. We didn't even get to talk about Easy to Assemble, which I absolutely loved. It's been a treat for us to talk with you. Ileana, thanks so much for making time for us, and I offer you the advice that you shared from someone in the book. Be your own flying saucer.
That's right. Be your own flying saucer. Rescue yourself, which is what Gus Van Sant said to me. And hey, if you like the book, we've started a movie podcast called I Blame Dennis Hopper. And so you can get to eavesdrop. You can find it on iTunes, and we're on the AfterBuzz Network. And we're going to be doing the same thing, cataloging great interviews with people from the silver screen that you and I grew up with. So you can find that too. We're going to blame Dennis Hopper for everything.
No question about it. Ileana, thank you so much for visiting with us this afternoon. Continued success.
Thank you.
We look forward to talking with you again sometime down the road.
Thanks so much. Have a great day.
That's Ileana Douglas here on Downtown. I Blame Dennis Hopper. Wonderful book. 9 minutes to go till the top of the hour. We'll take a break. It's Downtown on the Pulse, AM 620 WZON. Looking for a great gourmet burger, perhaps one voted the best in the area? Amazing hot dogs, terrific veggie burgers, Maine craft beer always on tap? Well, then, friend, the place for you to go is the Family Dog, located at 6 Mill Street in Orono. In the fall, even more reasons to go there than ever before. Don't forget those Sunday brunches, live music on the weekends as well.